It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
What does it take to change the course of lung disease? It takes groundbreaking research in pursuit of new therapies. It takes the world's leading experts in complex pulmonary conditions focused on restoring patients' quality of life. It takes visionaries to improve treatment options for even the most advanced disease. To lead lung care forward across our region and the world, it takes Temple Health.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hi, this is Debbie, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help you with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. And I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
Yeah, we can also send you samples, fast and free.
Wow, I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, no pressure, no hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Oh, okay, whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming.
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and save up to 45% site-wide. Rules and restrictions may apply.
The Score Midday Show, 10 to 2 on 670 The Score.
So Doncic in play, far sideline, left forecourt. Doncic holding and looking at play to Reeves. Works on Williams to the rim, and the layup is good. 3.3 left. 117-116 Lakers. Williams to Giddey over the midcourt line. Giddey goes. Midcourt. Oh! It's good! It's good! It's good! Bulls win! Bulls win! Bulls win! Josh Giddey from midcourt from the Bulls logo. What a ball game! Unbelievable! Unbelievable! Josh Giddey, I love you!
I mean, I put him in the hall, too. While we're at it, Bulls win! Bulls beat the Lakers last night 119-117.
Incredible.
Chuck Swirsky with the call right here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Josh Giddey from half court at the buzzer. Patrick Williams and Kobe White with back-to-back threes in the final seconds of the game, a game in which the Bulls were down 18 in the fourth quarter, 6 points in 6 seconds. It was a crazy game, and yeah, the man who called it is Chuck Swirsky, who joins us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. Of course, Chuck is the play-by-play man for the Bulls Radio Network. We love Chuck, and this segment with Chuck Swirsky is brought to you by Great Lakes Credit Union. Join GLCU in banking for greater good. Visit glcu.org for details. Chuck, I love you. What's going on, man?
How are you? Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. It's been an unbelievable 24 hours.
Oh, my God. Chuck, it's crazy how it came together last night. It didn't. Honestly, Chuck, I was doing a show here last night, and I know that the game was on WBBM because we had the Cubs game, but what we did during the show at one point in time is we potted you up from WBBM, put you on the score, and we listened, and it was at the end of the first half where one of the Lakers players hit a three to go up one, so that wasn't lost on me when Josh Giddey hits the prayer three at the buzzer to win the game.
Yeah, I mean, this game had everything that you would want and more. Number one, you know, when the Lakers come into the United Center, guys, you know, the bottom line is there's a buzz in the building because of LeBron and Luka and, you know, the gold and purple. There were so many, you know, LeBron jerseys. And I'll tell you what, there were a lot of Kobe jerseys as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, we start the game and, you know, the Bulls got off to a nice start. Lakers made a comeback. They hit a three to end the first half of play.
Yep.
They extended their lead. And then all of a sudden, you know, the three ball started working for the Bulls. And this is what happens when you're a three-point shooting team. You can miss shots galore for a quarter, two quarters, and then all of a sudden the ball goes into the basket. So last night it was a case of every possession was vital down the stretch, and you saw LeBron with a very careless turnover on the inbounds, and that triggered really what we were going to see. Williams hit a big shot. Kobe, as you mentioned, hit a huge shot, and after Reeves had the layup, I mean, you've got 3.3 seconds, and it's not like you can't get a shot off in 3.3. It's the type of shot, and you look at the big picture. Normally, when you have a full-length or a mid-court shot, if you're a defensive team, you want to make sure that that player slides over to a side, that they don't get a straight-on look, right? So Giddey got the pass, and he looked straight ahead at the rim, and he let it fly, and it went in.
You've done some pretty great things, called some pretty great moments in your illustrious career. Have you ever called a half-court buzzer-beating game winner? Because I can't think of too many of those in my time watching basketball, Chuck.
Yeah, you know what? With you know, the Rose shot in the playoffs against Cleveland really wasn't a half-court shot, but it was close to it when he shot that ball over Tristan Thompson of the Cavaliers. I mean, when I was in Toronto, Vince Carter did it on a, you know, not a regular basis because you don't have that many opportunities to win a game at midcourt. But Vince did it several times when he was in a Toronto uniform. But, you know, the truth of the matter is last night's game truly was one for the ages because the way this team is playing, talking about the Bulls, I mean, and to see this chemistry develop in front of our eyes. You know, after the LaVine trade with three guys coming in and how Billy Donovan has orchestrated this with an entirely new system during the course of training camp and into the regular season. I mean, guys, this team was 14 under 500 early, what, March 2nd?
Oh.
And it's just amazing what's transpired.
Yeah, 33 and 40 now. Now they're 7 games under 500. They've lost 4 in a row. They're obviously in position for the play-in, Chuck. But I like what you're saying about, like, because, of course, we're all going to have a blast on this ride. We were all locked in to you and Bill and Layla. I know Layla was in for Bergamini last night. I am all for whatever happens the rest of the way. But more important to me, I want to know if we are starting to see what you're indicating. Are we seeing the start of a legitimate Bulls core that can grow together with Josh Giddey, with Kobe White? I don't know where exactly with Montez Buzelis. Maybe Patrick Williams still fits into that, but that's what I want to know, Chuck. And do you think that? I mean, there's still a ways away, but are we starting to see something real? I guess is the question.
Well, I think the foundation, you know, you have to build a house with a foundation, not with a roof. And so right now, they're getting core pieces together. And I think what you're seeing is the byproduct of guys like Giddey, who now with the ball in his hands, and Kobe as an off guard, where you've taken some pressure off of him to be quote unquote a combo guard. But now Kobe has so much confidence. I mean, like, the guy has done everything you've asked for and more as a basketball player. And, I mean, he has leadership qualities. He has become vocal. He's not afraid to take a big shot. And, I to see the development of a young player, and he's still young, even though he's been in the league, what, 5-6 years. Truth of the matter is, to see a player come into the NBA and get better, and then one season leads to the next and leads to the next. His window has just opened as far as the prime of his career. Giddey is 22 years young. I don't think he has opened that window yet. There's a lot of growth, and what we're seeing now, he's benefited from, again, with the confidence from the coaching staff, his players, the ball's in his hands. Last year it was Gilgeous Alexander, and it was Holmgren. And now Chet, you know, and Shea are not longer in the picture. And you've got a situation with Giddey in control of the ball over the midcourt line as a facilitator and also a downhill dribble drive player to the rim, as we saw last night late in the game from 94 feet. So I think this is really a good thing that's developing here. But this club has still got to grow. They got to develop. They need an infusion of more talent, and I think the offseason will be very interesting for this club.
How far can they take this thing this year, Chuck? If you asked me a few weeks ago, I wouldn't have thought they had a great chance of coming out of the play-in. Now I like their chances as much as any of the four teams that are going to end up in that play-in tourney.
Well, absolutely. And you know, again, you have to take with 9 games left, it's going to be difficult, but it's not impossible. And so you've got, what, Orlando a game and a half in front of the Bulls, but Atlanta is just 2 games in front. And listen, it wouldn't surprise me if the Bulls overtook Orlando and Atlanta and ended up in the 7th seed and played a home game with the 8th seed. And then, obviously, if you win, you're the 7th seed and you play Boston. If you lose that game and you get the winner of the 9-10 game, but you still have a home game here in Chicago. So I think it's lining up really, really good if you get the 7th seed. If you're the 8th seed, obviously, you go on the road to play the 7th seed, but then you get a home game. So it would not surprise me at all to see this ball club lock down the 8th or 7th seed in the playoffs. The way they're playing right now, and the way Orlando's playing, and the way Miami is playing, and Atlanta, why not?
Yeah, why not? You know what, Chuck? I am just Joe Bag of Donuts. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's me.
Oh, no, that's you. That's right. That's right.
Hey, Mark, don't steal my bag.
I would never steal your bag. Hey, man. Hey, if Joe Bag of Donuts is here for a minute, what do you think about the Cubs win last night, Chuck? A 10-6 win over Arizona.
Listen, the Cubs are going to win the division, okay? You heard it here first. You can save this tape. The Cubs are going to win the division. And after that, who knows what's going on with the playoffs. But but I do think they're going to win the division.
Okay.
I think they're going to add a player at the trade deadline. And Jed Hoyer gets an extension.
Wow.
Oh.
Man,
the parlay.
Laid down
a parlay of Cubs predictions.
Trifecta. I like your confidence because, Chuck, it sure feels to me like if Jed Hoyer doesn't win this year, he might be in trouble. And it sounds like you want him around here.
I think he's a really good baseball man. I really do. And again, I'm just a guy holding a bag of apple fritters and chocolate frosted donuts.
Oh, that sounds good.
So, I mean, I'm not an expert on this. I'm just a fan. But I do think the Cubs are in a position. The division, I mean, you know, like, forget about Pittsburgh. And Milwaukee lost some really good talent. And, you know, I like the Reds under Tito, but, you know, I'm not in love with them. And so you look at the Cubs and you say, why not? I think they've got the talent to do it.
Apple fritters, man.
I like the positivity and the optimism, and the apple fritters.
Is that your go-to?
Well, I mean, I am an apple fritter type of guy.
They're so good.
You do seem like
an
apple
fritter. I just had a great apple fritter the other day.
Oh,
so
yeah?
Good. Nice warm cup of coffee.
I don't know what that means, Chuck. Yeah. I think it's a good thing, but you are an apple fritter kind of guy, Chuck Swirsky.
I am.
There is something.
Apple fritter to the rack. Count it in the foul. So,
yeah.
There you go.
That is spot on. That is spot on. Joe Bag of Donuts, really appreciate you coming on with us, man. Anything else? Anything on the White Sox? They got a win. They beat the Angels. Any bold predictions for the White Sox this year if Joe Bag of Donuts is still here?
I do like the farm system of the White Sox, and I do think that they'll be improved. But, I mean, after last year, they better be improved just a little bit. But, I mean, you know what? Going to the ballpark is always fun. And, obviously, everyone wants to see your team win. But I also want to see the growth and development of these White Sox kids. And I don't know all their names. I've got to learn them.
Yeah.
And I got to learn about them. But it's going to be fun. And I'll leave you with this.
Yes.
I want the Bears to draft that kid out of Boise State.
Oh, the running – you want them to go Ashton Jeanty, huh?
I'm with you, Chuck.
Yes.
Okay. You like the flash. You're bought in. The Bears need a running back. Why, Chuck?
Yep. I'm all in. I think he is a perfect fit for Ben Johnson.
I love it.
I don't think he's going to be available unless the Bears trade up. But if he's there, they got to take him.
I love it, man. This has been a blessing. We've had Chuck Swirsky and Joe Bag of Donuts.
Both.
Yes.
Yes.
It's great.
Both here. Chuck, you're the best, man. I appreciate you. Great call last night. You and Bill were on fire. Layla did a great job, too. Appreciate you, man. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Chuck.
Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
Yep. That is Chuck Swirsky, play-by-play man for the Chicago Bulls on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
I love him.
Yeah, he's the best, man.
I love him. As much as he loves Josh Giddey, I love Chuck Swirsky.
But he didn't put him in the hall.
He didn't put him in the hall.
He got the I love ya. It's an I love ya.
I love ya.
Yeah, I love ya. There's a lot of love right there. I love that Joe Bag of Donuts made an appearance here and that he loves apple fritters. Somehow that feels right.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Nerds! Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like filling out basketball brackets. Too many choices, too much noise, and no one wants a busted budget. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break down real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Make smarter financial plays today. No luck required. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Indecision. Overthinking. Second-guessing every choice you make. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Beige on beige on beige. Ugh. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today. It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Visit DollarShaveClub.com and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more.
At T-Mobile, we'll give you four free 5G phones and four lines for only $25 per line per month with eligible trade-ins. And no, it's not a contest. It's every day for a limited time. Everyone's a winner on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay. Up to $830 off each phone via 24 monthly bill credits plus taxes, fees, and $10 device connection charge. For well qualified customers, contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
The Score!
Runner takes off for third. There's Horner. Gathers it in. Over to first. Ball game. Cubs win. Presley finishes it off. And here in Arizona, the Cubs down the Diamondbacks 10-6.
That was on Marquee last night. John Boog Ciambi with the call of that Cubs 10-6 win over Arizona. Cubs are 1-2. Remember, they lost those games in Japan. Miguel Amaya, 5 RBIs, including a 3-run double in the fifth. Ian Happ, a 2-run double and a home run along the way. Justin Steele sort of struggled his way, pushed his way through 5 innings last night in this Cubs victory, again, by a final score of 10-6. Mark Grody and Rami Makhlouf with you here on the Score Midday Show. Rami, I don't know if I heard any your prognostication or your thoughts on the Cubs before this season started. How many wins, or about how many wins, did you think the Cubs would have, or do you think the Cubs will have this season?
High 80s. Okay. I know most of the projections I've seen 91, 92. I think that's a little lofty when you look at this lineup and this rotation. Recently, the Athletic has been, they ranked all the opening day lineups, all the opening day starting rotations. I think the Cubs were 17th in opening day lineups and 21st in opening day rotations. I don't know how you put those two things together and come up with 91, 92 wins.
I agree, and you're right. A lot of people who pay a lot of attention to standings and baseball, and what's including Pakoda, which I know is a system, but it has the Cubs with 90 wins this year. I can't get there. This is what I said before the season, and this is what I'm saying now at 1-2. I can't quite get to 90 wins with the Cubs yet this year. 86, 87. I think they're going to be better than 83 wins. Their total, exactly 83 and 79 the last 2 years. But if they had gotten Bregman, okay, if they had gotten an elite pitcher, like one or the other, I probably could have made it. Probably could have gotten the Cubs to 90 wins, but that part bugged me, and I know that I think Jed Hoyer did everything he could possibly do to get Bregman here or make a trade or sign an elite pitcher. I think he's a little bit held back on the finances or the money that he is, his allowance that he has in his wallet to be able to pay for some of these players. So based on that, I not yet. Cubs are good. They're not beyond that. They're not a team that is built right now, I don't think, necessarily to win playoff series. But if they play well early, maybe you get to the trade deadline, and maybe then Jed Hoyer can do some actual damage.
Yeah, but a 7-8-9 game jump from really one major addition in Kyle Tucker. I know they added some arms to the bullpen and did some other things to sort of fill out the roster, but a 7-8-9 win jump for a baseball team, it's a tall order.
Yeah, I mean, and you're depending on things like, you know, I keep coming back to Miguel Amaya. You are depending on the regulars that exist to have bigger years or to sprout, as I keep saying, which is another way of saying developing. Miguel Amaya, maybe Pete Crow or Armstrong, maybe he gives you some more wins, and you mentioned he did a winning thing last night, getting to second base and not getting doubled up and leaving the door open for Miguel Amaya to get the hit. So, yeah, you're going to be depending a lot on guys to do things like this. I do wonder, too, like, and I know that you're not supposed to, like, Happ had one of those games, like the opening day game, the big two-run double, a home run. He opened up a season, I think it was 2018. First pitch, it was a home run. I do wonder if Ian Happ, man, because he's a good player. I wonder if he's ready to go to another.
Take that next step.
Yeah, because he, like, I mean, I've watched just about every game that this guy, I mean, I was on the Cubs circuit when I was doing pre and post when he came up. He looked like a guy who was going to be great. I mean, just that stroke and that swing and the playing ability. I don't know, man. I don't want to, like, put that in the back of my head based on this game, but it feels like it would be right about time for Ian Happ to have, like, a really big season.
I could be wrong. We were talking earlier about the Bulls, and I said it wouldn't be the first time that a 22-year-old in Josh Giddey is unlocked, or a 25-year-old in Coby White is unlocked. I look at guys like Ian Happ and Nico Horner and Dansby Swanson, Saya. They're sort of who they are in my eyes as far as the player that they are now. So Kyle Tucker as well, and that's pretty good if you are what he is or has been throughout his career in Houston. If you're looking for guys with room for improvement between where they are now and their ceilings, I think it falls on PCA, Miguel Amaya, obviously Shaw at third base. Yeah. I think the rest of the lineup is kind of, they are what they are. They are who they are, and they're at their ceilings. And in my opinion, I could be wrong.
Right. And that's not bad. I mean, like, there's some good baseball, like Nico Horner. We saw him scalding the big, good baseball player.
Yes, sir.
Hitting, making good contact last night. So that was good to see. Let's hear from Jed Hoyer on the topic of putting together a 90-win team. Now, this is yesterday. This is before the game. It's Jed Hoyer on the afternoon show of Spiegel and Holmes, which was in Vegas.
Unclear. I mean, I think there's projection systems that say yes. There's projection systems that say no. I mean, ultimately, I think the beauty of this game is, you know, we need to go out and every day as an organization, from front office to coaching staff to players, that we need to try to exceed expectations and we need to optimize our performance. And that's really, to me, opening day is, it's the, you know, it's the first tee shot off the tee box. It's the, you know, it's the first game of the season, and it sort of signals that baseball is back. But ultimately for me, it's just, okay, this is the journey, and we need to, as a group, we need to outperform. And that goes really for everybody in the league, right? I think if we outperform, I think that we have a chance to be that 90-win team you're talking about, to you know, feel like we're a really deep, solid team. I think, but every team in baseball, I think, is looking to outperform and to get the best out of their guys, and you know, that's what starts today.
And the Cubs division is just so suspicious as well. And that was Jed Hoyer on the Spiegel and Holmes show yesterday. The boys in Vegas, they are still in Vegas. We'll go out to them at 2 o'clock today.
But with Carrot Top.
Carrot Top, top of the hour, 2 o'clock. He will be live with the guys in Vegas. I'm looking forward to listening to that. Plus, you know, we get out of here a little bit earlier. You know?
Yes, sir.
Put the earbuds in and we can listen to what's going on. Does Jed Hoyer sound like a confident general manager to you right now, Rami?
He sounds very realistic. You know what I mean? That because it's real easy for a GM to come out and go, oh yeah, we put together a great team. We could easily win 90 games. I'm real confident in this group of guys that we put together, and just give you GM speak. He's giving it to you straight, and he's telling you everything that's going to need to go right for the Chicago Cubs to reach that 90-win plateau that we're talking about right now. And the reality is, he's right. Everything that he's saying is true. I wish that wasn't the case. I wish he was just sort of padding the expectations and really believing that they are a 90-win club, but wanting his team to sort of outperform expectations in some way and get all the love that comes with that. But no, I think he's being very grounded, very realistic, and very honest when he says what he says. And while I say that and I respect that, I also hate that all that is true. I wish we weren't coming into this year like we have the last couple of years, and counting on guys to overperform or counting on guys to break out. You've brought up Alex Bregman a couple of times. That would have been great. That's a guy who comes with a certain level of performance where you go, if we get that, that's good. You got Kyle Tucker. That's a guy who performs at a level where you go, well, if we get that out of him, that's enough from that spot in the lineup. But asking every year, coming in and asking 3, 4, 5, 6 guys to outperform the back of their baseball card, to me, it's not a sound plan or
stressful way to live.
It's a very stressful way to live. And honestly, it's mid-market mentality.
Yeah.
That is not big market mentality. That's what they try to do in Cleveland, in Tampa Bay, in Milwaukee, is put together a group of guys where they go, we see maybe more in this guy than what that team got out of him. Let's bring him in and see if we can tap that, just tap more into that just a little bit and get a little bit more out of him. Dude, go and get players who you know who if they just live up to expectations, not beyond expectations, but who just live up to expectations, that you're going to be a good baseball team. And stop putting Cubs fans through this.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I have to say, like, Jed Hoyer, I don't want to be too dramatic, but there has been this because of the pressure. And like you, he sounds defeated a lot. Like,
a little bit.
Might be too strong of a word, or maybe just stressed. Maybe the word that we just used, that maybe Jed Hoyer is feeling it. Like when you see him, he kind of looks the part. He's got that concern. He's almost like talking to us, like, guys, you understand? Like, this is what I have. These are the limitations, money wise, that I have. And I know I got to win this year. Cubs haven't been to the playoffs since 2020, man.
Mm-hmm.
That's 4 years in an era in which there is a different expectation for this team, a new expectation that began in 2015. There is a lot of pressure to get their way back into the playoffs this year. So I think Jed Hoyer, and I think it's good. I think it's good that Jed Hoyer is wearing that, because you want your GM to do things and do big things and feel that. And then you have Tom Ricketts too, who he's had an interesting offseason too, because he got a little bit testy at the Cubs convention when he was trying to implore people, look, don't pay attention to those organizations that are spending crazy money, like the Dodgers and the New York Mets and whomever else might be on that list. Pay attention to the Cubs and the system and the free agents and all of that kind of stuff. So Tom's angry. Jed Hoyer is looking stressed. And that's really a perfect place, I think, if you're a Cubs fan, to have this kind of stress coming together and feeling like you got, because Tom wants to prove his point that you don't need $1 billion to win, and Jed Hoyer wants to save his job. So it might be the perfect storm coming together for the Cubs.
Do you think it puts the pressure on them and almost forces their hand to win this year?
I do. And I think, and I don't know if I've heard, I'd have to go back. Maybe we've got the audio somewhere, but I think Tom Ricketts has said again this year that, or Jed Hoyer said on behalf of Tom Ricketts, that if they are winning at the deadline, that they could pour more resources into the Cubs. So as long as that exists and this pressure is still there and the Cubs are in the race, I mean, yeah, maybe that's where it gets real and they actually do something where you're like, okay, now I think the Cubs can sustain some sort of playoff run.
When you say, Tom Ricketts' message of you don't need $1 billion to win, here's the thing. You got $1 billion, yeah. Dude. You got you're literally a billionaire, and the value of this franchise and everything that you built around it there in Wrigleyville has, I don't know, quadrupled, octupled, whatever that is. Since they bought the team, like the money is there. I know he talks about breaking even in terms of their year over year finances, but when you look at the value of the franchise and how much they've profited there when they eventually do sell this thing, I don't buy it when you cry poor or tell me that maybe you can't spend quite the way the Dodgers do or quite the way the Mets do. I understand that. Those are pretty unique situations, but there's no reason the Braves or the Phillies or some of the Boston Red Sox or some of these other markets should be able to outspend the Cubs. This isn't Tampa. This isn't Milwaukee. This isn't Cleveland. This is Chicago.
Yeah. I mean, Tom Ricketts should just go around town just doing pickups, the way gangsters do, just going to all his places. Go to Hotel Zachary. Hey, fill up the bucket. We got another player to pay. All right, now let's go to the rooftops. All right, what do you got for me? Where's my envelope? Take care of that.
Where's my envelope?
That's the money that was supposed to go to Bregman. So you've got this whole thing starting to mesh with the Cubs. So I think that could probably be good. And the Cubs know it. I mean, obviously they knew they were a third baseman short or a bat short in terms of what they were thinking. They didn't want to have to go with Shaw as the guy at third base. And who knows how it turns out. There could be more. I mean, it would probably be a bad thing if Justin Turner had more starts, because that would obviously suggest that Shaw didn't do well. But I don't know about him. I don't know about him if he's going to look good. What do you think of Shaw? Do you like him? Do you like the fact that he is up here and then you've got a developmental guy on a team that's supposed to win?
I do. I mean, you're going to have to develop some guys. The Yankees, as much money as they spend, the Dodgers, as much money as they spend, they have a developmental system, and they draft and develop their own players and bring them up to the major league level at some point. But if this is a win now year, You're already counting on PCA to make a big jump in year two. You're already counting on Miguel Amaya to make a big jump in year two. To ask that from three guys, and one of them being a rookie, to be the three pieces that sort of extend your lineup and give you the ability to score runs 1 through 8, 1 through 9, that's a lot to ask from three young guys and one rookie. That's a little bit too much, in my opinion, for a team that is in win-now mode, which I think they are when you go out and trade for a Kyle Tucker who has 1 year left on his contract. I don't know about you, Grody, but I look at that and I go, well, if you don't re-sign him and you don't win a World Series this year, you lost that trade.
Yeah.
To me, that's the gamble you made with that. If you can't do one of those two things, re-sign him and have him in a Cubs uniform for an extended period of time and keeping you in contention and relevant for an extended period of time, or you don't win a World Series in the 1 year you have him, you lost that trade, especially with Cam Smith making the opening day roster at 22 years old after doing what he did in spring for the Astros. So it on one side, it looks like win now, you go and get a Kyle Tucker. On the other side, it's, well, we have a rookie at third base, and we're hoping that he can extend our lineup and give us a little extra punch.
God, and today's going to be interesting. You've got Jameson Taillon going today, and you talked about the pitching staff kind of being projections, having middle of the pack or so. Look, Jameson Taillon, and I don't like saying, I'm speaking hesitantly now because he tends to be an every other year guy, but he's been good for about a year and change, about a year and a half or so. So if he, you know, let's see what he looks like today, let's see what he looks like early on. If he keeps going what he's had going, then you're in a good shape. I'm not worried about Justin Steele despite the two shaky starts coming out of the gate. You know, Shota looked good in Japan. I'm not expecting the magic that he had, the Fernando Valenzuela like run that he had in the first half last year. But I think the point that I'm trying to make here is that it could be a pretty good pitching staff, but it still lacks that absolute dominating, you know you're going to win ace. Justin Steele is close, but he's not one of those guys.
And the thing that sort of sticks in my craw about that, Grody, is who's going to be on the mound for the Diamondbacks tonight? Corbin Burns.
Oh, is it Burns?
Yeah, who is a free
agent. Am I off a day here?
I thought it was Corbin Burns. Am I wrong about that?
No, I think you're wrong about that. I think Burns is not.
I thought they said it was going to go Gallen Burns for games one and two. Am I wrong?
Let's find that, but I think it was like a thing. Like, it's a story. I think Burns is not pitching against the Cubs in the series.
I stand corrected.
It is Merrill Kelly.
I stand corrected.
Yeah, No, it's weird. It should, like, I got to check this out, but it was a little bit weird that Zach Gallen was starting, but Gallen's been there. So actually, I get it. He's very good, obviously, Zach Gallen, who looks, by the way, like, do you know Josh Mooney? Is it? No, Kyle Mooney.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Doesn't he look like
a little bit? Yeah, you know? A little bit. I didn't notice it until you said it, but yes. Yeah, a little bit.
Saturday Night Liver, though, he looks like him.
My point still stands, even though I was wrong about him being on the mound tonight. There's an ace. There's a stud in Corbin Burns.
Yes.
Who is a free agent, and the Diamondbacks in Phoenix. You know, they pony up the money to go and get that guy, and Chicago just sits it out. The Cubs just sit out the bidding for a Corbin Burns when that's exactly what you – and not to mention – his former manager, the guy who sort of unlocked him at the major league level, and Craig Counsell, is your manager now. You have that relationship and a guy who knows how to use a Corbin Burns and get the most out of him. And they were just not in those discussions at all as he ends up in Arizona. Stuff like that does not make sense to me. If you can't get in on Juan Soto, you can't win the Shohei Ohtani sweepstakes, okay. You can't get the Corbin Burnses of the world.
That guy would excite Wrigley Field.
The Alex Bregman. You know what? These are the types of guys that you could have gone out and gotten this offseason.
Yep. You named two. I mean, Corbin Burns and Alex Bregman. No doubt about it.
Start your new career with H&K Group Incorporated. H&K Group wants to offer you the opportunity to be part of the industry leader. 80 locations across Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Delaware. Visit hkgroup.com and apply today. H&K Group does not discriminate. Experience more with H&K.
StreetEasy knows former New Yorkers never stop talking about how much they miss living in NYC.
Life used to feel like a movie, but since we left and bought a house, it's like living in a DIY home repair video.
When it's time to buy, let StreetEasy connect you with the right agent you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more.
StreetEasy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bears.
Mark Grody, covering the Bears for 670 The Score.
Can I get a couple minutes with you here, man?
Man, I need talking today, man. I'm sorry.
Okay.
We'll go next to Mark Grody. Are you from The Score?
Thank you. Hey, Dennis.
Thank you, George.
Go Bears.
Bears.
Mark Grody.
Whatever, the Bears suck.
On The Score.
You ain't my bitch.
Okay.
I feel like we have to play Metallica after that because Grody sang Metallica, but he does indeed join us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, Mark Grody, CircaLasVegas.com. And Groats, Magoats, the reason we wanted to have you on was just because you're you.
I appreciate that, and I am going to start by saying, Layla, this is something that you didn't know, so I'm not mad at you. I don't want people to go after you. I only sing Metallica in the morning. I'm sorry. I know that you were hoping for it. I think Studs probably felt that, too, and that's why he didn't play the Metallica music. That is something that I can only guarantee in the morning. But I'm here with you guys. I'm willing to talk Bears, Cubs, Sox, Bulls, Blackhawks, whatever you guys want to get. You got a problem with this,
Grody,
Marshall?
Grody,
you got
Grody.
A problem with my
it's
parameters?
It's 12:01:55 and counting. So you're saying if we had booked you last segment or two segments ago, you'd be fine singing Metallica? Is that what you're saying?
100%. 100%. And, you know, and I honestly, Marshall, I would take requests as well. But the fact that you guys are just violating my AM Metallica only, quite frankly, it's a little bit upsetting to me.
You know, whatever you need to get your day started right, Grody, we're here to support you.
No, I'm not. First of all, I used to listen to a radio station where they had mandatory Metallica, and that mandatory Metallica took place at 11. And you know what? They didn't care.
Leave World War I open.
Yes! See, look.
Wait, did they
you
really?
You can't even obey your own rule.
I know. I am now going. You know what? That's it. I was supposed to work WBBM this afternoon. I was supposed to do a show tonight on The Score. I'm officially out for today. I'll come back tomorrow, but that's it. I'm punishing myself. That's it.
I didn't know you were doing all that. If I'd known that, I probably would have been like, let's get him closer to his time where he has to be.
No. You know what? I'm going to make this very clear to you guys right now, because I hope to be seeing you guys in there a lot. I am happy to come on your show whenever you guys want me to, unless I'm hanging out with Dave Wanstead. Then I can't come on the
That's
show.
That's understandable.
So you're saying
other than that, like, you guys are eligible for my VIP plan, which means you can call me. I can be driving around. I will pick up and I will go on your show.
So
can't
you're
get
always
my girlfriend to do that.
Available unless
I'm always
doing
available
something.
Unless I'm doing something.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
That's right. That's right. So unless I'm doing something with Wani, I am available to you, Layla, and to you, Marshall, anytime.
All right, I appreciate that. Okay, so you saw Brad Biggs' mock draft. Have you come out with your? Have I missed your first mock draft yet?
No, I have not come out with my first mock draft.
We're looking
though,
for Grody 1.0. I mean, it's getting late. Yeah. Some people got three mock drafts out. Some people are on 3.0.
All right. You want to know who I would slot in at number 10? Or I'm doing this right now because I haven't done this officially.
Oh,
yet,
I like
Marshall.
This. I like it. This has not been done on the Take the North podcast.
No, we have not even come close to. Dan and I are pacing ourselves, man. It's been, we've had so much obvious stories on the Take the North podcast that we haven't had time to play around much, and we will because we will cover the draft like nobody else. But I guess, guys, you ready for this? With the number 10 selection in the 2025 NFL draft, the Bears select tight end Penn State Tyler Warren. And there is a little bit of a history to this for me. I'll tell you what, last year, first round, my first mock draft, I said I had the Bears taking Brock Bowers. And for some of us, this is suggestive stuff. This is what I am leaning towards right now. I think that all of a sudden then you have assuming Tyler Warren is what he has been in college, you have a really good tight ends room. And it actually puts Cole Kmet in a more comfortable spot too in his life, because, you know, he's more of the class of in-line Y tight end, and there is an expectation that, you know, Cole Kmet can catch, can get, you know, 700 to 1,000 yards, but Tyler Warren probably would be that classic U tight end to complement Cole Kmet and to become a great weapon for Caleb Williams. So there you go. There you go. Number 10 overall, Tyler Warren to the Bears out of Penn State.
Okay, wow. So that's very interesting. I want to let you know your colleague, Brad Biggs, also a contributor here on 670 The Score, he's got Tyler Warren going at 7 to the New York Jets.
Ooh, so he respects the man quite a bit, too.
Clearly, okay. He does. And I'm just curious, if Tyler Warren's falling that late in your mock draft, which you haven't done yet, but you just went straight to 10, does that mean there's no offensive lineman on the board at that point? Is that why you think they're doing that? Or you think they're targeting Tyler Warren?
This is just my mock draft, Marshall.
Okay. No, I'll roll with it. I'm just...
Yeah. But no, there's some logic to it. And quite frankly, Marshall, this is one of those drafts now where, because of what they have done with Dahlman, Tooney, and Jackson, and Zacchaeus, and Odangbo, and Grady Jarrett, and all the guys that they have brought in so far, which has all been good, it opens things up for such conversation to start to talk about Ashton Jeanty, to talk about Tyler Warren. Now, if they do go offensive lineman, that great. That is, I mean, if I had to do an honorable mention for number 10 guys, I would probably go with Kelvin Banks Jr. out of Texas, just because of that. To me, that is realistic, because I do think Will Campbell is out of LSU is going to go top 5, probably, maybe New England.
Even with the short arms? Overall.
Even with the short arms, yes. Peter Skoronski, Northwestern guy, went through all of this and then ended up as a guard mostly. So even if Will Campbell does end up as a guard, I don't think that's a waste. And quite frankly, one of the things that I've thought about with the Bears too is, if let's just say they get Kelvin Banks Jr. or somehow, some way, Will Campbell is to fall to the Bears, or if they just take a tackle, is it out of the question that, because now with what they've done with the interior, you do have much more acceptable to just say, yeah, Braxton Jones looks pretty good at left tackle. Darnell Wright looks great, always has looked good at the right tackle spot. But if you brought in Will Campbell or Kelvin Banks Jr., like, can you turn one of those guys into, would they have the positional versatility to be a guard early on, either providing depth or even sliding in where Jonah Jackson is? I mean, I know that that's like almost conspiracy sort of stuff, but I'm thinking ahead in terms of what the Bears are doing with this offensive lineman, and it's never, never enough. That said, my third in line for honorable mention, Mason Graham, Michigan.
I feel like a lot of people like Mason Graham. I was going to say earlier, it is my impression that the Jets are pretty infatuated with Tyler Warren. I feel like they've even used that word, or in love with him. Like, they seem very focused on trying to get him at 7 overall. You never know if somebody's going to make a trade, but that seems to be the case here. I'm surprised that no draft picks have been traded in the first round up until this point. You know, I think that would have occurred by now,
it's weird, right?
If it were going to. Grody, what do you think of the fact that there haven't even been any pre-draft moves to talk about with picks?
Yeah, do you mean specifically with the Bears, or just anybody playing around with draft order, Layla?
Like, yeah,
just
both.
Any team?
Usually there's transactions.
Right. You know, a lot of these, too. I mean, we know how it goes down on draft night. People save these things up for the actual evening of the draft. I know what you're saying. Like, usually there is a little bit of bouncing around. And we are getting closer, aren't we? So I imagine that some of that is still to come. And most of it probably will happen in the days either leading up to the draft or on actual draft night, which, by the way, will be taking place in Green Bay, Wisconsin this year. And boy, oh boy,
are they excited.
No, I'm not excited necessarily, but I was in Green Bay for that finale game of the season that the Bears won, by the way. Thomas Brown and the Bears. Trivia question. Who was the head coach 20 years from now, guys? You guys will be asking the trivia question. Who was the head coach of the Bears, ready, 20 years from now? The last time the Bears beat the Packers at Lambeau.
The real question is, will Thomas Brown be a head coach in the NFL 20 years
that's
from
a,
now?
That's I love that question. That's a really let's do this for real. With Thomas Brown, will he be a head coach in the NFL in the next 5 years? We know that he sounds like a head coach, looks like a head coach, plays the part, all the body language is there. Can he successfully run an offense now? That's what we're going to find out. Because we saw, I mean, he was put in, if we're really talking about Thomas Brown, he was put in an impossible position to succeed and had some success, impressed some people. So really, I hope that he walked out of Hallis Hall with more credibility than when he walked into Hallis Hall.
Yeah,
for his sake.
I think he will be. Yeah. I think he will be a head coach, right?
Yeah, I think he will be. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, he's got it in him. Like I said, obviously it's going to depend on success and what he's able to do. You know, we found out that it's not all about aura. Aura's good. Aura is a must. You know, it's right at the base. But now you just got to be good. And Thomas Brown seems to have it. Let's hope for his sake that it kind of manifests itself.
Well, and the latest news on him was that he was joining Vrabel's staff in New England as a tight ends coach and passing game coordinator. I know there have been several reports and people talking behind the scenes that he very much does want to be a head coach in the league one day. But it sounds like he might have to escape the Panthers and the Bears having such a losing season in order to gain some panache for his resume.
Well, part of the reason...
Well, you also... Yeah, go ahead, Marshall.
No, I was just going to say, part of the reason I think he will be a head coach the next 5 years is he's attached himself now to what looks like it's going to be a winning vehicle. Although, in that division, I say that, but it might not be. I don't know.
Right.
Hey, things happen fast when you have success as a young coordinator. So if there is fast success, he will quickly get a job. And we all know how it works, and that is how it works. Like, if you're winning, everybody like, oh, who's the offensive coordinator for this? Who's the defensive coordinator? You know, who's the assistant? Who's the quarterback's coach? Everybody's getting promotions. So it's going to be based on that. I think, too, that Thomas Brown, let's not forget that, you know, Thomas Brown ascended to an incredible... He started off as a background guy with the Chicago Bears, basically, when he came in. Very little contact with Caleb Williams, very little authority with the offense. He goes from that to offensive coordinator to head coach. So his head had to have been spinning, and look, he wasn't even the number one choice over Shane Waldron. So that's where he was developmentally, Thomas Brown, even if they did hire the wrong guy. So on paper, he had a long way to go, but we'll see what this Bears bump does for him.
Well, I also think it says a lot about the Bears' decision making at the time when the person you trusted with the head coaching job at the end of the season was that far in the background previously. And we had seen reports, you know, Sports Illustrated for the Players survey, for example, considered him the second most admired when it came to offensive coordinators, and he had to clean up a situation with the Panthers. You know, we forget that history. Players like him, and I really think it speaks more to just how the Bears haven't done a very good job evaluating people.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we all know that the Shane Waldron hire turned out to be a disaster, really one of, and still worth mentioning because really it's one of the critical mistakes. I don't want to get too dramatic, like in Bears history, but really in the last 10 years that when you have the number one overall quarterback who is getting attention the way Andrew Luck got attention and all the elite quarterbacks before him that were prospects, and then you bring in the wrong coaching, that is heavy, heavy wrong in terms of how the Bears handled that whole situation. I will say this, though, because I think it's important to look back at Caleb early on in the season. Part of the plan, I think, with Shane Waldron, my understanding is that they thought of Caleb Williams the way we all did, as in, this guy is the truth. He's an NFL quarterback now. He can handle it. So they threw a lot at him, did Shane Waldron. That was the part I liked and understood, and maybe Caleb himself wasn't ready for all that. It was just the way the messages were communicated, the way he was literally coached on the field, the reaction by other players to the way that he was coached, that was the problem. I never had a problem initially with the Bears giving everything to Caleb and treating him like a big boy. It didn't work, but that was the idea. He just was not coached well on the field, especially relative to other players.
So, Grody, we get your thoughts all the time on the Bears, but I know you're deeper than that. You got more than just the Bears up your sleeve. So I want to ask you about the start of baseball season because it's about to happen. Are you more excited about the Cubs or are you more scared for the Cubs based on what you've seen so far and what we know about where baseball is and where the Cubs are?
Yeah, I think the Cubs are going to be good this year. And
how good?
Please underline that word good. I didn't say average. I didn't say great. None of that. Just think about the word good. This Cubs team is equipped to win the division. I don't think that they are as assembled now. They are not assembled to win a playoff game. And or a playoff series, I should say. Anybody could win a playoff game. Relative to this division, they're going to win it. I really think that this is where, even though the Brewers keep doing the things that they do, like we didn't think the Brewers would be what they were last year, but I think really not having Corbin Burns, Willie Adames, Devin Williams, Brandon Woodruff, I think it's going to actually start to catch up with the Brewers this year. So the division, they're all good. I just don't think they're built to win in the postseason right now. I think I like everybody else. Like I watched both of those games, and it's almost wrong to take them too seriously. Because, for instance, like somebody like Justin Steele, I see you smiling. Like sounds looks like Marshall might have taken it too seriously.
Oh no, that was the cringe face. But go ahead.
You can't take it too seriously when a guy like Justin Steele, guys, wasn't even stretched out all the way in spring training. He wasn't even ready to play baseball yet. And yes, I am making excuses for his poor performance. And Lord knows I've been hard on Justin Steele in the past. So I don't know how you could have had expectations for anybody when you're still in spring training mode.
Well, I think the expectations for the what they're considering ace of the Chicago Cubs should be high, right? If you're trying to build a team and you say you're in it to win it and all that, then theoretically that should be the case. I don't even want to get into what we're seeing out of Houston with the reports on Cam Smith, by the way. How hard was that to read? Now, listen, Mauricio Dubon, by all accounts, seems like a very nice person, and it would be super positive. Like, if I needed him to say something about me, you know, he might do that. He was the one who talked about the 60 home runs. It's not like that was actually the general manager of the team. Either way, it sounds like the Cubs drafted the person they thought that they knew him to be, and then the Astros traded for the person they thought they knew him to be, and maybe he's the one who's exceeding expectations already. Did you see those reports?
Yeah. I mean, yes, I did. And
I covered Mauricio Dubon when he was he's a Sacramento native when he was the River Cats. But you know what? I if he's as good as people think he is in Houston, the Cubs have a problem, not Houston.
Mark, what do you think?
Well, could this be like the... Okay, ready for this? Ready? I got a great analogy for this player. Are you guys ready? Are you guys braced for this? White Sox fans?
We're braced.
You guys are both White Sox fans.
Bolted down.
You ready? You guys ready for this? What if he turns out to be the White Sox version of Fernando Tatis? Like we should not have let that guy go kind of thing. I don't know if that's going to be the case, but of course you're going to keep on watching. It just tells you guys, you know, it just shows you that for better or for worse, this might be good for some people. The fact that he is not with the Cubs anymore shows that the Cubs are going bleep to the wall to win this year. That they are not. That's why the Matt Shaw thing is weird. He does not fit in right now because he's a developmental guy. If you are in it to win this year, you don't want guys like Matt Shaw having to struggle on the major league roster while this is happening. So that's why, like, to go back to the beginning of the question, I would feel much better if the Cubs had gotten Bregman, like just symbolically, or another starting pitcher. Symbolically, I would have felt a lot better, and literally as the Cubs play.
Hey, Mark, I want to remind people, coming up Thursday, April 17th, we've got a live Take the North podcast from 6 to 7 p.m. on 670 The Score, broadcasting live from the Blue Cross Blue Shield performance stage. If you'd like to be a part of the live studio audience for that show, go to 670thescore.com/contest to enter for a chance to win your way in. Excited.
And Perry Farrell will be opening for us too. Perry Farrell of Jane's Addiction will be in the performance studio as well.
So just not
lots of Metallica.
Not Dave Navarro. Mark Grody, we thank you for the time. Thanks for joining us.
Great to talk to you guys. We'll talk soon. Bye.
Thank you, Mark. Bears.
Bears.
Bears. Got it.
The Score Midday Show, 10 to 2 on 670 The Score.
I mean, well, there is no best case, because if they make, if they win out of the play-in, they're going to get destroyed by Cleveland. That's one on the ledger of the side of those who said, why not chase Cooper Flag, right? I mean, because this is fun, and I'm you can hear I'm excited because it was a fun game last night, great trip, fun basketball to watch, but what are we doing here? I mean, they're not going to be
so
Cleveland,
true.
Right?
So true. Oh,
so I love it. That's kind of the reality. But, you know, I mean, if they win two play-in games and make the playoffs, Arturis and the organization believe that's organizational development too for these young players. So let's see where it goes.
That was Casey Johnson on with the morning show, Mully and Haw. He had a lot to say when he was on with him, talking about the restrictions on, for example, Coby White's contract. What do you have to say about just the Bulls from here on out? Marshall, I think I heard a little bit of what you like to say about their fate after this play-in game that the Bulls seem to be hurtling toward.
Listen, if they can get to the 8 seed, there's a chance that they can alter that future, because then they can play a one-game playoff against presumably the Atlanta Hawks, and if they win that game on the road, where they have a winning record, by the way, away from United Center.
Now 19-18 after that win over Denver.
Then they can just head to Atlanta, get a win, proceed to Boston, and lay at the altar of the Boston Celtics instead of the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Those options don't sound great.
Well, no, but you have options, is my point. People make it sound like all they can do is ascend and then have to play the Cavaliers. No, you can play the Celtics instead, the reigning world champions.
That sounds fun.
It would be fun. You know why it'd be fun? Because it would give us something to talk about. If they get swept, okay. If it's a gentleman sweep, and I think you could look at that series. I'm way ahead of myself, by the way, by talking about the Bulls in the playoffs.
It's okay. We're already to that point where you just have to accept the fact that they're likely going to get there.
And that's my point. If they get there and they find a way to win two games in a seven-game series with this team against the Celtics or the Cavaliers, I think that is a fine job done by Billy Donovan and the Bulls. And let me tell you something, Layla. If they win tomorrow night against the Lakers at home, hey, Billy Donovan, how you feel about being coach of the month in the Eastern Conference? We're inching closer and closer to that reality.
Well, you know how I feel about it. I've always argued Billy Donovan coach of the year. You know, that's how I've tried to make sense of all of this, because otherwise, how does it make sense? And that's a concern for me as well. So I feel like that is something that that can be brought up in a way that makes it all kind of make sense. Now, the reason we talk about this right now is because the Bulls are off today. They play host to the Lakers tomorrow. That's at home at the United Center. But Billy Donovan was on this morning with Mully and Haw. And as we're trying to figure out the meaning of what the Bulls are doing right now, Billy actually offered his view on why he wants this to be happening with them winning in a draft where they got control of their pick.
And I know a lot of people have a lot of different opinions of what we should or shouldn't do, you know, as it relates to the draft, free agency. I get that. But there's something really, really powerful in players that are younger. At some point in their career, they've got to impact winning. And even though, you know, where we're at right now as a team, you know, we're in the play-in, but we're still kind of at the bottom, you know, of the Eastern Conference. But the reality is we have a chance to play meaningful games, and that's going to help Modest. It's not just like, hey, the regular season's over with, we're not playing for anything, let's just roll him out there for 35 minutes and just see what the guy can do. And now what happens is the focus gets taken off the result of winning. Now, I think the results of winning are a byproduct of the things that you do for 48 minutes. And you've got to understand every possession's important. Paying attention to scouting reports are important. You know, the game plan discipline is important. So I think the one thing we've tried to do all season long is to make the point that all these games are important. And let's see what this group can do if we're fortunate enough after April 13th to be in a situation that we're playing after the regular season's over with. Those things are meaningful. That really, really plays a major factor, I think, in player development. And it also puts these guys in situations that they haven't been in before. And I think when you take the focus off of winning, you miss, I think, a big point of what's going to happen in the future. At some point, these guys are going to be put into a situation where now the winning becomes important. You want to make a run. And if they don't play in these meaningful games, I think it hurts their development. So what we've tried to do as a team, to your point of whatever the perception is of what or how the season should go, we in the locker room have kept it on, let's see how good we can be as a team. Let's go all in to become as good as we can be. And then whenever the season's finished up, hopefully it's something we can build upon going into the next season.
How do you feel when you hear that? Because I think the first thing I think of, Marshall, is that Billy Donovan is pointing out, in his own way, his job is to still win games. His job is to still develop the talent that's on the team. As to whether or not the front office makes decisions that steer them in the direction of getting a better draft pick in the offseason, that's on the front office more than it is on Donovan.
So I agree with you in this. Billy Donovan is going to try to win with whatever players he has. Players don't tank. Coaches don't tank. Front offices tank. And I warned anybody who would listen to me at the trade deadline that the caliber of players they were getting back when they made the trade of Zach LaVine and when they got Trey Jones and Zach Collins and Kevin Huerter, when they got those guys, I said, those guys can actually play basketball. And because of what I had seen from Coby White last year with no Zach LaVine in the picture, I could foresee a world in which the Bulls would make a push. And then looking around at the other teams that at that point were around and underneath the Bulls in the Eastern Conference standings, I said, I wouldn't be surprised if they just hold pat at this number 10 spot. In fact, they have gotten even better. They're at the 9 spot and have a chance to climb even higher. Here's what I'll say to all of this. You heard Billy Donovan. He is an enabler of AK, Arturis Karnišovas, and his idea that they can both, you know, put themselves in a position to get a good draft pick, but also develop the players they have and push for a spot in the postseason, whether it's play-in or whether it's play-off. And there's levels to that because we've seen the Bulls in the play-in not necessarily pay off in the last couple of seasons. But Billy Donovan is an enabler because he's going to have AK believing in that vision because he's going to make the Bulls better. And now they are on a treadmill. They are stuck in purgatory. But here's the good news. Coby White has developed beyond, I think, any of our expectations. And that's coming off a year in which he showed how much he can improve season over season a year ago when he was in the front run. He was one of the front runners to be the most improved player of the year in the NBA. Can't win that this year, but I would argue, even though the stats are similar, he has taken even another step forward in his style of play to get the Bulls where they are now. And now it's a matter of looking at Josh Giddey and Coby White and Modest Bouzelis and understanding these can be three of those 9 to 10 players that AK talked about when he said, maybe not superstars, but very good players. And it also allows him, and this is where I struggle, it allows him the possibility that he can have some latitude to say, we're going to do this and we're going to do that and we're going to make our overall roster better by maybe moving one of those players or be in position to get a superstar at some point. My issue right now is I don't know that I trust AK to be able to do that delving out.
We know a few things about the Bulls based on practice, not necessarily statements. We know that Billy Donovan pushed back against people saying he didn't want to be part of a rebuild. Although in coaching his team, he is coaching it out of a rebuild. I don't know if that was intentional, but that's one way to work around it, right? That's one way to get past it. Another thing is that we know that the Bulls front office seems to value players perhaps more than draft picks. I push back when people say that they don't value second round picks because I don't think that a guy who, one of his career highlights in AK, drafting Jokic in the second round would ever be considered a guy who says, I don't like the second round picks or I don't value them. But you see how they take players that we thought could have been flipped in that 3-team deal with the Spurs and the Kings, And instead, they kept him. Now we're seeing what's happening. Kevin Huerter has become this regular presence now for the team in a starting lineup, at least, you know, while they're still dealing with some injuries. But the way this has come together, when you hear Billy talk about it, I understand why he says, I need to develop these guys by having them try. You know, we talk a lot about losing players, and I think that's a misnomer too. I think the best way to develop players is when they have guys who are elite talent next to them, showing them the way. But if this is how he has to do it based on who he's got and what he's teaching, I understand why he's still doing that.
I think the bigger thing is when AK made those trades and those guys got to the roster, on a tanking team, you would have seen guys get released. You would have seen buyouts. You've seen all kinds of things. You didn't see any of that. And that let me know that the Bulls were still going to try to fill up the United Center and develop guys and also put an interesting product on the floor and make an attempt at a play-in. And we'll see what happens. And well, Billy Donovan said, I'll show you what's about to happen. And that's been all good for Coby White and company, not great for those who have a dream of a tank.
Well, and 708 here on the text line says it the best. Billy is a really good coach, and the Bulls have some good players. But where and when do they get their superstar player?
I think that comes via trade. It has to. And that's why I say I'm okay with the framework of what the Bulls are doing. I just am unsure if Arturis Karnišovas can pull it off and have the right guys ready to go and pick the right guy he thinks is a superstar, a la Sam Hinkie in Houston when they got James Harden.
Right.
A la the OK City Thunder when they got SGA in the Paul George trade, and then he became Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
Yeah, and I think it was Daryl Morey and Sam Hinkie at the time, and now Morey's in Philly.
And you see what they're doing.
Harder tank. You never question what the Sixers are doing or a Daryl Morey man team when it comes to trying to get assets. So that's why this is so confounding to me, is when you know that the G's in the league, the ones who have gotten proven rebuilding teams, and Sam Presti or a guy like Daryl Morey, or when you see how other teams are amassing these assets and these draft picks, it does contradict what the Bulls are doing in a different way.
6-3 on the text line. Interesting here. Missing the playoffs to hope for luck is not a plan. If that was their plan, they should be fired.
I mean, I don't...
I would argue you could have made the roster worse. Those guys could still develop. They would miss the playoffs. Not to just hope for luck, but also because their roster wasn't good enough, and you're still developing those players. You're just not winning as many games.
Well, and don't forget that they have extended players where you could argue there's a roster spot. Like when your four is Patrick Williams, you know, when you decide willingly you want to extend Lonzo Ball, who, by the way, the update on him is not this week for a comeback and a return from injury.
But the bigger point is Lonzo Ball fits what they're trying to do. They are trying to run and gun and run and gun tomorrow. We're seeing it, right? But without Lonzo Ball, he would fit perfectly with what the Bulls are doing right now.
He would. And unfortunately, Lonzo Ball was fitting perfectly in with the original plan they had. But as we know, he got injured. His comeback is still amazing, though, and still one of my favorite stories of the year. There's no question to that whatsoever.
The Score Midday Show, 10 to 2 on 670 The Score.
In the past, fouls that one down the right field line. Long run over there. I take it back. That sneaks out. It's gone. The wind brought it back. A two-run shot for Cam Smith.
Well, you can see what the Houston Astros are excited about with a guy like this. He's got some dynamic tools.
That was the Astros broadcast calling one of Cam Smith's four home runs that he had with the team this spring training. And we want you to know that tomorrow night the Cubs resume their regular season, as you know, against the Diamondbacks. Pre-game coverage on the Score here begins at 8:35 p.m. It's a late one. Pat Hughes and Ron Coomer will be on the call for first pitch at 9:10 on the Southwest Airlines Cubs Radio Network. And the reason we bring up Cam Smith, as you know, he was considered the third baseman of the future past Matt Shaw. He is one of the three people traded by the Cubs for Kyle Tucker, who we know that the Cubs have for a whole year. Isaac Paredes, also on that list, another third baseman worth discussing. And Hayden Wisniewski, another name that a lot of Cubs fans wanted to see have potential given the flashes that we've seen out of him in his career. It was already an expensive trade when you knew what you were giving up for one of the best offensive war players in baseball, Marshall. But when you put it all together and you see that Cam Smith now is called up after just 32 minor league games, the third fewest games ever. You know how the Astros evaluate talent. I am already trying to figure out how I'm going to be monitoring this the entire season, knowing what the Cubs gave up for Kyle Tucker for a year.
Well, if you see him on SportsCenter, you know that's bad. It's like, who makes more SportsCenter appearances this year? Is it going to be, I don't know, Kyle Tucker, or is it going to be this young man, Cam Smith? Of course, Kyle Tucker's the logical answer, right? But let me take you a step further, Layla. What do the Cubs have to do as a team to justify 1 year of Kyle Tucker versus giving up this young prospect who, his first six games in single A, he had a home run in each of those games?
The years of control on Cam Smith.
The years of control. That's what we're talking about.
The
1 year.
The entire deal of Cam Smith.
No, but seriously, that's how we're looking at this now. The lens is, if Cam Smith was starting in the minor leagues and was called up at some point this season, you wouldn't even feel the way you feel right now. But Cam Smith making the opening day roster and being announced as the starting right fielder, I believe, versus Kyle Tucker getting 1 year of him on a Cubs team that's already 0-2, that you know it is playoffs or bust. I have this simple question. Is making the playoffs even enough to justify it if you don't do anything when you get there?
Yeah, that's an excellent question when you consider what is ahead. You're in Jed Hoyer's last year of his contract. We know that there could be a potential work stoppage after that next season. So we see the report from Jim Bowden, by the way, saying that the estimated value on Kyle Tucker could be 14 years, $600 million.
Run that by me one more time. Run those numbers one time.
14 years, $600 million. Now, Jim Bowden has been all over the place when it comes to valuation. We know that. But you still need a starting number.
Okay. Just to be clear, the Jim Bowden estimate of what he thinks the valuation is on Kyle Tucker's next deal, that would take him through his age 42 season.
I mean, which in theory could be the case.
Okay.
Given how baseball contracts are stretched out, now given the average annual value, take not even look at Shohei Ohtani. Consider what happened with Bryce Harper and the Phillies, for example.
Okay.
And the Phillies are reportedly a team that would be a logical fit to go after Tucker.
Even with Bryce Harper already on the roster.
That's what the Habs do.
And what did the almost had its do? Is that what we can call the Cubs? Almost had it?
Well, remember when we did the categories where we put the Cubs in? There's in it to win it, there's playoffs for real, and there was but the division, but we decided Cubs were trying for the playoffs for real. But Jed Hoyer says to John Greenberg he needs his team to outperform expectations again, that which I think is saying you wanted to add more to the roster and you just didn't.
Yeah, I think that's a one way to speak to the people above you and say, hey, we could have been better, but you know, you decided to cap us at this amount and I can only do so much with the contracts already on the books, which they don't have any bad contracts on the books. They're paying guys what the going rate is, if you look up and down. Now, it's a lot of veterans as opposed to pinning on young players, so that's why the number is so hefty when you look at the Cubs' total payroll. I guess
it is hefty, but at the same time, they haven't even given a $200 million contract.
Right. They've been smart in giving those extensions that buy out the last years of arbitration.
But like Dansby's 177.
That's their biggest free agent contract of all time.
Yeah, Jason Hayward was below 200.
Right. Listen, one team hasn't hit 200. Another team in town hasn't hit 100. So that kind of tells you the difference between the small market versus the bigger market teams.
Hayward was 8,184. So the AAV on Swanson was higher.
Yes. So when you're looking at the Cubs now, I'll start with this. Based on the valuation you gave me from Jim Bowden, can you see a world in which the Cubs pay that to Kyle Tucker?
No.
Okay, so it is a one-year rental. Can you see a world where the Cubs find a way to extend Kyle Tucker or give him another contract?
I think they would have to make the playoffs. He would have to absolutely want to be here. But I even say that's correct. And that is a wild number. That's just absolutely outrageous wild. Say it's even in the 300s. I don't know that they do that.
No, they don't. And I want to go back to something that, back to the John Greenberg with Jed Hoyer. This is the thing he said when asked about Cam Smith and that trade to get Kyle Tucker and Cam Smith making the roster. Because that's what I love about the recency of this interview. Quote, our guys did a great job with Cam Smith. Obviously, we liked him in the draft. He played great for us last year. He's a really good young player. You're not going to acquire a guy like Tucker, I don't know where you rank him among hitters in baseball, without giving up real talent. When I look at our team, what we've lacked on the field for the last couple of years has been sort of like we've been talking about. Where do we find that kind of impact player? And he does everything. He plays defense, runs the bases, great offensive player. So obviously, when you make that kind of move, you're going to have to give up real talent. And look, we drafted Cam. Our guys thought really highly of him. He's a really good player. And we felt like in that window, to make that kind of deal. And when he says in that window, but the window is 1 year. That's my issue. The window is 1 year. You need a bigger window.
Yeah, they were in the window for their likelihood of being successful and competitive right now. I wonder, there is no way we're going to find this out. Was it Cam Smith the Astros were really after? Was it Matt Shaw?
So you're saying Matt Shaw?
If the Cubs had the decision to make between Matt Shaw and Cam Smith, I wonder what it was.
It's a great question. Don't have the answer, but it's a great question.
You would argue that based on this, Cam Smith wasn't their top prospect. So you could argue that potentially they would have wanted to hold on to Shaw.
So would you rather have Matt Shaw or would you rather have Cam Smith?
Well, that remains to be seen.
We're about to find out this season.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a compelling discussion. I can't wait for part two. We're going to revisit Cubs later in the show around 5 o'clock.